Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
All right, ladies and gents, welcome to the Live the Fuel show. This is one of our first ever live on-site interviews. Today, I am Scott Mulvaney. I am your host. And we are on-site at the Hatch House Ventures site in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And to my right, if you guys are watching the YouTube video, because we are videoing today as well, just to show some fun behind-the-scenes stuff, next to me is Steve Borner. I'm sorry, it is pronounced Burner, because people keep telling me in two different ways. And to his right is David Gritz. So give you guys a quick intro. I'll start with David because I knew him first. David and I connected through networking. He needed to run a fitness gala event, of all things, for a Kickstarter. And I love Kickstarter campaigns, and I never thought I'd ever actually get involved in one. And it just so happened that they had already run a gala event up in Boston, and then you guys needed to run one here in the Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. And I said, okay, well, I know fitness people. I'm a fitness nut. Networking, connecting circles. Next thing you and I are connected. And then you're one of the first people to ever actually put me on a podcast that you were testing with a company that you used to be with. So some quick more background, David, is now he's no longer with that company. Now he's more independent. He's now partnered up here working with Hatch House. And obviously that leads me into Steve Burner. Steve, you've been around the block. You are a entrepreneur. You run Hatch House. You founded Hatch House. You also have been on a number of other podcasts, one I just were talking about earlier today. So I'm going to let you guys kind of define more of that as we progress into the show. But part of the whole purpose of me launching the Live the Fuel show was I've been wanting to do this for over a year. I love podcasting. And you guys had approached me, actually David, I think, right? I think it was you first.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
And you're like, hey, man, we want to launch a podcast. We want to figure out something to do. We want to help the startup world. And I said, well, I love startups, obviously kickstarting campaign for your, it was the perfect burpee. And I said, well, let's get it together and talk. Next thing you know, we're actually sitting here on site a couple months ago, right? Mm-hmm. And one thing led to another, and I said, well, I guess I better pull the trigger and get this thing going. Next thing you know, I'm buying equipment. By the way, guys, if you guys are watching the video today, all this cool lighting is theirs. I might have to get some of this. This is nice stuff. So a little trick for video is make sure you have background lighting because you can look really bad. But Steve, let's just jump right into it. Part of the purpose of me launching this show and why you guys really felt entwined with it was the theme that I'm going with this show, the people that I want to interview, the people that I want to help, is centered around health, business, and lifestyle. And from our last meeting, you guys seemed to be really dialed in. It seemed to really click and make sense from what we all talked about. So what really excited you about that, and how are we tying that together? Why am I here today at Hatch House?
Yeah, I mean, I think we hit it off right away because we were talking about the interconnectedness of all things in business. And if you are healthy in one part of your business, then it can affect and roll over to the others. Like, I always look at it as like, you know, a stock. Or, you know, it's like parts of your business are doing well and some parts aren't doing well. And then it contributes to like your overall like stock value, you know. But if you can really kind of pick up where things are lagging, like you can increase like your overall stock value. And I think like what you put into your passions and your purposes and what you do on a day-to-day basis, you benefit from like a higher stock. So that's a weird analogy I just made up on the spot. But it's also one that kind of makes sense in a weird way, right?
That's the fun of podcasting.
You agree with that, David?
This is real.
I would say potentially.
It makes sense. But yeah, I mean, that's how we clicked and started talking. And the importance of all of that, David and I talk about it a lot, and we certainly aren't perfect and talk about like our own shortcomings. And we're always trying to like challenge each other to do like, you know, pull up contests or like get up at a certain time. And like, it's all revolved around things that don't contribute to our bottom line revenue necessarily, but it's all part of like that.
Well, let me stop you right there. You said it doesn't contribute to bottom line revenue.
It doesn't correlate directly where you can see it, but it does.
Don't we actually do correlate this? Because we actually understand the value of healthy, fit-minded, and physically people seem to work more effectively, more productively. That's what I think the corporate world or the big, big company world still trying to figure that out. They don't realize that. But I think that's something that we all clicked on was that if you do wake up in the morning and let's say you drop and give yourself 20 push-ups, I'm sure your heart rate's moving. You're probably a little bit more awake. You chug a glass of water to get your hydration going. You're probably going to be a little bit more awake. You might be a little more excited to get things going. You know, since we're on that subject, what's one of your morning routines you try and stay consistent with?
My morning routine that I do pretty much every morning is I have a visual in terms of, like, I like to see my goals. So I like to actually draw something that if you were to look at it, you wouldn't understand. And what it is it's kind of like this timeline that starts as the middle of a spiral and then loops out and gets wider and wider. And along that timeline that gets wider and wider is a series of things over the next 2 years that I want to accomplish. So I have drawings on that timeline that when I look at that, I know what it is. So I actually have this in my bedroom, and then I have it in the shower. So when I look at this timeline, I actually am telling a story, and I'm seeing myself and how I feel during that story and what I have to overcome. And you don't just picture yourself in a Lamborghini and think you're going to get a Lamborghini. I like to envision, like, the road traveled and experiences and the ups and downs. And as I get through, like, how does it feel when I accomplish that one part? So by the end of the 2 years, it encompasses, you know, my personal life, my physical well-being, and my business life are on that. So when I see that in the morning and I'm groggy and I'm just staring at it, like, it's just a way to, like, remind me of what the day is going to be like. And
so you highly recommend physically documenting this. Like, this is something that it sounds like you physically have to have, not just, oh, I think about it on a daily basis.
No, there's plenty of data to support, like, written goals and seeing them and experiencing them daily, but not just, like, reading them, but, like, actually, like, embodying the emotions associated with accomplishing that goal. So I've always been a big fan of hypnosis. I've always been a big fan of meditation. And incorporating those things into business is important. So I've had different routines in terms of, like, morning and, like, what I do and everything, but, like, the one consistent that I've always had going back, I played golf in college and Division I level, and, like, a lot of visualization and goal setting there. So hitting those goals and then having my own formula for doing it is a little bit different, but I draw sketches of what the success will look like. You know, for Hatch House, I drew, you know, what our grand opening launch would be like. And if I were to put those two pictures together, like the actual picture I sketched, and then 8 months later, the one that was in the paper, it's like weird how close, like very weird how much they overlap.
So put a percentage on that, like, because I've never actually seen the before and after.
Yeah.
What, how, David, like, you've seen this?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
So what
85%.
Sorry, guys, in the video, we can't show you everything, but what do you, you said 75-80% at least?
85%. If I were to draw the picture with my own handwriting of the picture, it would come pretty close.
It's a picture of me cutting with big scissors. And okay. I had, you know, people in suits. Like, I imagine the mayor would be there. And, like, our ribbon cutting for our first opening. And I met a lot of people there. And then when we opened, you know, I drew us, like, on our front, you know, porch outside the office. And then I knew if I drew that one goal within a broader goal.
Yeah.
Like, the goal is not to have scissors in my hand and cut a ribbon. But if that is accomplished, then the greater picture is accomplished. So that was, like, the feeling that I wanted to put myself in. And I put it above my toilet, so when I took a leak every morning, and I would actually see it. And I would be looking at it and saying, all right, well, I know what I have to do today to get closer to that.
People don't underestimate the power of a bathroom. Like, you don't realize, like, you're using that facility multiple times throughout the day, especially if you're a at-home solopreneur or an entrepreneur, you know, home-based business. Like, you might want to maximize that property a little bit. Sounds like you guys definitely did that.
Oh yeah.
Or even just have level awareness of how much you're using it and make sure you're consistent throughout the day.
Okay. Well, you know, hopefully if your nutrition's dialed in, you are staying pretty consistent throughout the day. So there are some people who struggle with that. Future episodes, we may end up discussing this. So, David, on the same theme that he was just talking about, the whole, and it basically, the theme we're going with, like, this last topic is manifestation. Like, you're basically manifesting your vision and what you want to see and what can happen. And if you take the time to document it and put it into place, it obviously fulfilled and came through. So what is, to rewind a little bit before what he was bringing that up, it actually started with the morning routine, what it is that you do to balance this whole health, business, lifestyle concept. So
yeah, why don't I tackle both the morning routine and the manifestation?
There you go, throw it all in.
Awesome. Yeah, so morning routine, three things. So one is I really like to balance my mind and then balance my energy. So I start out with my mind, and I have, like, a subscription that I set up on this site called Blog Lovin'. And what it does, it sends me an email every day at, like, 6:30 a.m. So I get a little ping, and it has, like, all the pre-sorted places that I like to read, like the different tech blogs or scientific stuff. So I sharpen up in the morning. Then I usually like to set a meeting for myself if I can, like, relatively early before 9. So I have to get up by that time. Otherwise, I'll be letting someone down. So that creates a little bit of motivation there. And then I've been starting to do some pull-ups, so I'll try and do some pull-ups when I get up too. And I would say that's a little bit of my morning routine. But what I think a lot of people lose is the importance of making your day happen in waves and cycles opposed to happening in stretches. So a lot of people think, like, I'm going to work for a 4-hour stretch or 8-hour stretch. But instead, you got to think about it like waves. Like, a really good person that I learned this from is this guy named Tony Schwartz. He wrote this book called The Powerful Engagement, and I went to one of his public sessions. And what his idea is that you can't work fully productively more than 90 minutes. So every day I try and think of it in chunks of 90 minutes. So in the morning, like, what's my first 90 minutes? And I try and put, like, the most important thing that I want to accomplish in those first 90 minutes, but not something that's, like, absolutely critical to accomplish, but something that it takes the most amount of mental energy to accomplish, like writing something, creating a complicated spreadsheet, or solving a problem, because I know that, like, the wave throughout the day is going to get less and less unless I do something to peak it, like whether I eat something different, like have a chocolate bar for, like, some caffeine or whatever it is. But I try and space it around that. And then second question, manifestations. What I do for manifestations is a lot more analytical than Steve. Is I like to keep spreadsheets, and then in the spreadsheets I'll write, like, in this month, here's some of the tasks, or here's some of the things to accomplish by when.
Like a checklist? Or
no, it's not a checklist. So think about it as like a more like a Gantt chart. So if I have a space of time, like, what am I accomplishing in each of the different tasks?
Everybody knows what a Gantt chart is. So let's go ahead and define that.
Yeah.
We have all kinds of listeners. They're going to be listening to this show.
All right, good call, Scott. So
short version.
A Gantt chart is really simple. If you just think of a bar chart that's vertical, turn it horizontal, and then each of the bars represents a space of time that could either be from one day to one month, and then in that space of time, you accomplish things.
Okay. All right. So here's like you bring it back. When I hear like best practices for people, like in the morning, they're talking about it, and then I try them,
right,
and I say, like, and I ever, like, people listening or watching, like, you try things and they don't work, and then you feel guilty that they don't work, right? It's like you're always trying, like, different things. You heard his routine? I would fail miserably in that routine. If I'm starting my day in an Excel spreadsheet, I'm screwed.
No, I'm the
right?
same way.
So I'm a visual person, like a more of like a creative mind, see things, visualize people. And not to say he's not creative, but I would be more creative, and he's more analytical. But in our business, when we're working, like, that's very powerful. Like, he has to do things his way. I see things my way. I go to the whiteboard. He goes.
Sounds
to
like that can work, though. I mean,
it does work. But it's also for, like, people listening. It's like you got to grab what you learn. If someone's like me and listens to him, they can't do that.
Okay.
And they'll try and they'll feel bad. But it's like if you're trying to emulate someone else's routine, you have to almost find people who are like you and think like you, because we're all programmed differently.
Well, it goes back to that. I mean, you see it on quotes. You see it on people's YouTube channels. You see it on people's podcasts, and you hear it. People talk about you are the product of the five people you spend the most time with. I believe that's a Jim Rohn quote, if I remember correctly. So it goes back to, okay, not just those five people. Let's get more granular. Do you have the people that have a matching mindset? Can you guys feed off of each other to develop that to a bigger strength? So, but before we proceed, I just want to make sure you get that message clear out, what you were trying to define for us, since we got stuck on the whole graph chart.
Yeah, I know how the Gantt chart works. But just to be clear, so I don't use a Gantt chart as part of my daily routine. That's just how I manifest my goals. So I can track my goals on a timeline using a Gantt chart. I think it's an effective tool.
Well, clearly, everybody's brain works differently. So, I mean, I spent years business world management, and the biggest thing that finally light bulb for me was, after years of working with people and finally meeting some good mentors and people to develop your skill sets to the next level, you realize, oh yeah, reminder, there's kinesthetic learners, there's auditory, there's visual. So, oh, guess what? Their brains work probably the same way. So they're going to learn things differently. So you have to communicate to people differently. They're going to learn differently from you and from others. So it's all about adaptation. So it sounds like you guys have got some interesting differences that it seems like play to a strength, depending on the meeting you're in or the project you two are working on together.
Yeah, if we want to go down that path in terms of, like, complementary partners and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly. So I've had numerous partners in the past, and I'm not working with any of them now. So how well do they go? Not so well.
Apparently.
Apparently. Some of them I'm still friends with. Some of them, you know, we just won't ever speak together again. And they were out of convenience. And I can look back at, I'm 31 now, so I look back all the way to, you know, age 18 when I rolled out my first company with other people, and it was out of convenience that we started working together. And if you're in school, business students tend to lean on business students, and engineers tend to partner with engineers. But the same thing is in the real world. We find our comfortability in other people. And that was a mistake. And David and I, just by the winds blowing and our interests overlapping in the same area, met up for a coffee and lunch and just started talking. But what we realized is that we were a good fit business-wise. I was opposite to him in personality and some skill sets, and he had a lot of things that I felt Hatch House really needed. And we just started treading lightly. We worked on a couple of things together. We didn't formalize anything. And then I think over time, like David would agree, like we became friends after we became involved in business, and that happened like through the process. Ideally, you work with someone that you can tolerate. I mean, David drives me bananas sometimes. You know, like we're at Hatch House now, and he parks in the wrong spot. He takes up two spots with one car. I still don't understand it. I'm still upset about
it. Is that from the last meeting I was here? I remember you actually called on your way back from Philadelphia. You're like, hey, dude, can you move your car by this time when I get there? Were you parked in the driveway?
Probably.
I remember that phone call.
So do I deal?
Hey, we have limited parking at the Hatch House.
Okay. Yeah, all right. So, I'm parked on the street.
Thank you.
We are in the city of Bethlehem, people. I mean, that's okay. And you're within a few blocks of Lehigh University's campus, so there's tons of students who do have cars.
So in that term, I think we have healthy conflict. I don't think we've ever had an instance where it was like, I know we haven't had an instance where it was like problem.
Okay.
But it was like healthy debate, and we both like to be right. But I think we also then, like, if David admits that he's wrong, he's like, okay, fine, it gets to that point. I'm like, yes, like, I'm right. Which is most of the time.
No, I would say, like, maybe a quarter of the time.
Yeah. Well, this is cool. This is cool because, I mean, if anybody can look you guys up on LinkedIn, you guys are on the social media, so good job, because that's what I'm always consulting to some of my clients. I'm like, guys, control how you exist. Make sure you exist in the right way. And LinkedIn's a great platform. So anybody can look up your history.
Sure.
And they can see what each of you guys have worked on. And from a business standpoint, since Hatch House is basically a startup incubator, is that the correct term?
Yes, we have a network of four right now. It's a network of startup accelerators. I mean, accelerators and incubators, they overlap already. But I would say we're leaning more towards, going more towards the accelerator model in the future.
Okay.
We have programs that run 12 months, and we all like live here, work here at this location. Other locations don't have a living component.
Right. You have one in Delaware. Was that your first or second one?
That was our second one. Okay. So our first one here is our flagship location. We have talent that comes, applications that come from all over the world to be here for 12 months and go through our program, introduce them to mentors, opportunities, funding sources. But then our other three locations are in partnership with universities and their higher ed programs.
Okay.
So we decided instead of expanding locations, we would license our brand and get locations by using the resources of other organizations, which were schools. And we plug in and we get our revenue through schools. And we,
I think it's powerful, man. I mean, I was not your traditional college student. I started working while paying my way through college because I just didn't grow up in that family model. Like, no one in my family ever had a college degree. So I already knew, I got to learn at a very young age of 17, 18, getting into my first startup company, that I was just a call center monkey answering phone calls, working your way up. It's like, okay, yeah, it's good to have the education and the business mindset balanced. And I think I can remember, even from an adult professional student, when I finished my degree years later on nights and weekends, that it still comes back to who you're surrounding yourself with and what kind of support system you have in place. And the universities are doing what they can off of the traditional model that they were built on. And I'm not going to try and have you guys trash your relationships with your universities, but we have to admit, though, it's not as supportive as we would like to think in most campuses and most curriculums for that startup person.
Well, you know what?
I don't know if you want to take a stand on that. But.
Yeah, we have good stories and bad. And both David and I, without getting into it, have chips on our shoulders in regards to our undergrad or graduate experience in school and how we tried to be entrepreneurs in that rigid system. And what confinements in their setup and their legacy setup of being a nonprofit, and they can't give you advice on this, and you can't have your intern come in and work on campus. It's against their rules. You know, it was like we had issues with that. And when I had friends when I was going through grad school, and they're hearing me bitch and moan about higher ed and entrepreneurship and how it doesn't mix, and now they see me with my business that is now, not by original design, has expanded into higher ed.
Right.
It's the motivation is because we disagree with parts of it. We think the efforts are monumental and very important, and there's a lot of credit to the universities who are changing, but what we can do as a third party is come in and do the things that they can't, advise on the things that they can't, expand their network, offering them things they can offer their students, and it allows them to circumvent their own limitations.
It's funny because, like, I mean, we've talked about this, and people ask, like, what is your target audience with this show? And I'm technically, you know, X-Gen, so I'm obviously going to support our generation. But obviously, there's the X, the Y, there's the... I don't really see the baby boomers targeted to this. I really see the millennial, because there's so... This millennial generation wants everything now. They want everything their way. And there's a lot of independence coming out of that, and it's very exciting. But we have to admit, they need some guidance. They need the right circles to surround themselves with. I mean, this goes back to when you were a kid and they tell you, your parents just yell at you, like, that person you're spending time with, they're not a good influence on you. Yeah. Well, okay, the same thing goes the rest of your life. If you, if you're not happy with what you're achieving or what you want to grow at any age, you have to change that circle of influence.
For sure.
So, I mean, I think it's pretty powerful what you guys are putting together here, because what are the other two out of the four that you said you're for?
Yeah, so again, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is our flagship location. Right. We have Delaware. No affiliation. We're at the University of Delaware, so we have a live-work set up there.
That's a direct affiliation.
That's a direct affiliation. We have another direct affiliation. These are all licensing partnerships where we license our brand and then services that accompany the programs we run. We have one at Rowan University in New Jersey, just outside of Philadelphia, and then we have one opening at Bucks County Community College in Bucks County, PA.
Oh, I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, I was just there this morning.
Okay, well, yeah. Congrats. So,
yeah, thanks. Okay. And then we have software. We saw a pain in how community managers organize their entrepreneurial ecosystems, and we were experiencing it. Without getting into that, we saw a pain, and we ended up just developing software to help universities or incubators or accelerators or co-working spaces, like, organize their entrepreneurial community. So we have that product that we offer as well.
I'm a fan of co-working spaces. I spent a few years bouncing around the country when I was left here for a few years moving out west. And I first started experimenting only because I heard about it, I believe, on probably a podcast. And I was like, oh, what the hell is a co-working space? I'm going to go drop into one. And I think the first one I went to was in Phoenix. And there was one in Scottsdale, Arizona. And then I hit one in Denver, Colorado. And I was like, oh, this is totally different. Now, granted, some of them are all modeled differently. They're not modeled like you guys, like here in Bethlehem. And guys, earlier in the show, you might have heard some water running, maybe some footsteps. There might even be voices. I have no idea if these microphones are picking it up or not, but we're in an active environment. I mean, you guys have how many people in this house?
So we have five companies here, and then in our actual, like, resident company, people are in our program. Like, we have a bunch of companies that we work with in the community. Yeah. And then we have, I would say, between 7 and 12 at each of our locations.
Awesome.
That they're, if there's not a living component there, we're running semester-long programs that are just like any other accelerator, you know, like a truncated methodology to apply to their business. And we manage between, like, 7 and 12 each semester for those.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah. So I guess my question then, going back to our because I'm the health nut, and we've been talking a lot about business. So the balance of the health and lifestyle thing, you guys clearly have two different choices or styles to work with you, and obviously you're complementing each other. What have you seen come in here? I mean, obviously most of these guys are young, right?
Mm-hmm.
And girls, I'm sorry. There is actually one here, one female.
Yeah.
So what are you seeing out of the millennial startup generation with this health, business, lifestyle balance? Like, give us
in terms
taste.
Of like that balance, or like the businesses that they're producing, or how they're doing it.
You know, I would like to start off first with the lifestyle big piece, because I this is something I stress when I speak to groups and I speak to people, and I'm like, guys, like, people don't understand the importance of this, because it's important. To, you know, people are really hardcore and they want to get their company up and going and they want to go. But we've all experienced this. You clearly younger than I was. You started up your first business at 18. Dave, you did yours in college. I mean, we know what the stress levels are like. So I think that whole life balance piece is important to myself, and I think to our audience as we grow this show. What have you guys seen? Like, what do you think is coming out of that millennial generation? Do they get it?
So I can do two things. I'll talk a little bit about some of the things that our current and previous residents have done, and then also some things that we've just seen out in the marketplace of other co-working spaces and incubators.
Cool. Yes.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things is, like, we didn't by design select people that are only healthy or interested in fitness, but it's just this environment kind of attracts it a little bit. And what we find, which I think was a little surprising to me, is that a lot of people cook here. Like, they prepare their own food, and you never know what people are cooking. We have some different ethnic backgrounds, and you come in and you smell the food and it's like, wow, that's pretty awesome. And then you hear the ingredients and that sounds even better.
I believe our first meeting here, one of your tenants or customers was cooking on the grill out back, and I was definitely very hungry. So he was definitely grilling up some very tasty meats and vegetables. So it smelled great.
Yeah. And the other thing is we have residents that go for runs. Like one of our previous residents, she was a runner and she kind of set the pace for other people and went out almost every other day or so. And we actually have some residents that are vegetarians in our Delaware location, and they had a business based around that, and they're shifting a little bit away from that, but that's definitely a trend. And I think a lot of it is around the locale too. So I spent a lot of time in San Francisco, and there were a number of co-working spaces, or they call them hacker houses there.
I noticed that, yes. When I was there a few weeks ago for a trip for a wedding, and I bounced around the city for a couple of days just because I had to go. It's a whole different horror story with an RV. I'm not even getting in on this show. But San Fran's got this whole hacker thing going on. I thought they meant like computer hackers. And I was like, okay, I don't need to go work there. But no, that's just a brand concept that they're creating, or what?
It's a different model than what we do. But essentially what hacker houses are known for, and I don't want to speak for all of them, but they'll essentially say, the good ones will say, hey, we have connections to venture capital here. You fly out, stay in a bunk bed among eight other bunk beds, and we'll charge you $3,000 a month, and you'll be here for 2-3 months. We turn over beds quick. We'll plug you into, I know, I get it, and we'll plug you into the VC space, and then you have people come from China, and you have people come from India, and they're trying to get, you know, spend some serious dough to be in Silicon Valley and get plugged in.
Well, I was going to say, but San Fran does have that strength. They're right there by Silicon Valley.
And I hope a lot of them deliver that, but it's also the real estate there is insane. Mm-hmm. But those business models at hacker houses are essentially, if they own it, they're concerned about a cap rate. So what are they paying on a mortgage versus what are they bringing in? And wait a second, if they provide this service, they can charge more, and their cap rate and their profit on the property is more. Okay. You know, so that's a real estate. We're not in, we might, David and I might have real estate on the side, but it's not related to Hatch House Ventures. We don't own the properties. You know, we lease this one here, and then now that we have licensing plays with universities, we don't hold any leases. You know, that's one of the advantages of doing it that way.
Nice.
But here in what we do, we're taking a West Coast model. We brought it to the East Coast. There were a few here before, certainly not in this town. But it's not a high turnover, high cost kind of a thing. Like, it's, we want that community you were talking about, like that family coming together after 12 months. It's emotional to see people go and then new people come. But that is what we are creating. When you leave Hatch House, like, you're always a part of it.
But again, what you guys are helping create is that circle of influence that's going to stand the test of time, I would hope, because this is classic example of the very broadly used term of networking. Dave and I are big networkers. You're a big networker. It's how you get connected in the current industry you're in, or maybe the future industry you want to get into. You want to get a job. You want to start a business. You want to open your market up. You gotta know people.
That's
you
another conversation, networked. But it's the only thing. It's the only thing. Yeah. It doesn't exist without that. Nothing exists without that.
Well, and that's something that I see a lot with these highly intelligent, we'll go with the millennial generation for now, because we're still on that subject, but you got these highly intelligent people with these great ideas, and maybe they're not getting the right amount of spark out of their university or the campus they're going to, or maybe they haven't even gone to college, they're just doing this out of their garage, but part of business is knowing how to network and knowing how to talk to people and know how to get people. And admittedly, I have people I've told this to and they don't believe me, but I was more of a type B personality when I was younger.
No.
And people be like, no, dude, you're very type
A. Seriously?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know this. Now, people seem not to agree with me on this, but I was like, dude, I was a little bit more closed off. I can't give you exact time, but I just know that's in my brain. And I know that I was shy as a kid.
I was too.
And well, then, that's your mom's guy.
I forget. Yeah. I mean, she could probably call me on that, but I was shy. You know, I was very busy. I was always biking. We worked on a farm, stuff like that. I think that's part of it. I didn't have as much exposure to the social circles because we were always working on the farm. And then I had some connections from karate as a kid, but you know, sports helps with that. But I wasn't always a huge sports guy as a kid. And that really helps a lot of people develop some of those social skills. But again, going back to the primary point here is I see a lot of millennial generation, they're using social media to build their networks per se. But then when it came to come time to do an in-person meeting, I see a lot of people crashing and burning. So how are you guys targeting
I'll run with that for a minute. I'm sure David has thoughts on that too. So here's my kind of big picture theory on all of that. I think social media is great and what we can do with our phones is great, but it absolutely kills numerous skills if you rely on that technology. For instance, like when GPS, before GPS, I knew how to get everywhere in this town.
Oh, yeah.
GPS comes, now I forget, right? I just rely on something.
Yep.
Dating.
I Google map it.
Google map it, right? Let's say dating, for instance. Back in the day, chivalry is all but dead. If I were to, you know, my grandfather has stories of taking two buses to go meet my now grandmother, and he used to wait outside of her nursing ward until she came out.
Oh, yeah.
But that was like chivalry then. If I did that now, geez, they'd chase me off with a broom. But the point is that like that skill is gone. So then when it comes to soft, those are all soft skills. So now we have all this technology as kids are growing up. They're not forced to go out there and make ends meet and do it like the old school way. And these employers who are used to those skills, their reactions to kids coming out of college or young kids in general is there's a huge lack of soft skills like they've never seen before. And I attribute it to a lot of the lack of interactions, but an increased amount of interactions overall because of social media and things
okay.
like that.
So going back to that primary point then, which I completely agree with everything you said.
Good.
But how are you guys...
If you don't agree, it's the one rule here. If you don't agree with me and David, then you...
Well, I think we're pretty clear on that. But I'm going to go ahead and disagree for a second here and just but how are you guys doing anything to help with that? That was part of that original question was, like, what are you guys... Is there any concept or programs you guys have already implemented or that you're already working on to help? That's a big part of it. I mean, that's something that's going to come out of this circle. Or are you guys letting it happen naturally? Is it organic? Do you guys don't need to launch a program? I don't know. I mean, what are you guys seeing?
Yeah, so I'll take three different things that we're doing. So
this guy's a multitasker, people.
Yeah. One of the things that we like to do for our residents is really create like a one-on-one coaching environment. So a lot of the other accelerators that are out there are focused on one thing and one thing only, growth. So they want to grow their user base, they want to grow their revenue, they want to grow their traction in some way or another. And what we realize is growth is really important, but what we look for is growth of the individual. So in the 3 or 12 month program that they go through with us, what growth are they going to achieve? So we do a number of things. We hold events on a regular basis, so they're forced to be involved in the community, or the community will literally come to them. Like we're doing a 8-week boot camp that we're going to have here at Hatch House, where we have speakers come in, we'll have 30 or 40 people here, and they have to interact. They have to be a part of it.
Nice.
So the other thing...
Big thumbs up on that one.
Hey, thanks. Yeah. First Wednesday night, you can come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Come back and party.
Nice. The other thing that we do for the residents is we look at their business outside of the perspective of just the numbers. So, for example, we were coaching one of the businesses in our Delaware location, and they had some challenges with their employees because, frankly, when you're 20, you haven't had a lot of experience with hiring and firing people and scouting out how good they are. And we'll take the time and coach them and say, well, are you saying this? Are you saying this? And how are you reading their body language? How are you thinking about the overall picture than just you need to hire 3 people with these characteristics?
Right.
And that becomes really important. And then the last thing that we do is we encourage collisions. So it's very Tony Hsieh type of thing, but... ultimately, in the house, at any one time, there could be people coming in and out. There could be, we have some people manufacturing a product in the basement that could jump in anytime. We have guests that come in, and a lot of times...
I think a guest just got here, actually.
Yeah, exactly. What timing. And those guests can do very well for our residents, and it might even be something that could benefit their business. And we'll be out there scouting for all of our businesses for potential partners and resources for them so we can help them with those connections. And not only that, but how to engineer the connections so they know how to make the introductions properly.
Wow. That sounds like a lot of resources. So, and is that consistent across all the models? So it doesn't really matter if you are a site that's integrated directly with the university like Delaware or here. I mean, it sounds like it's pretty consistent.
Pretty much the same thing. I mean, the only, with those locations, the collision isn't in, your hallway at 5 a.m. sometimes. You know, the collision is framed differently and presented differently, but the principle of collision that David's talking about is something that we would design into any space. If we could redesign the ultimate Hatch House, you know, it would follow like the way Steve Jobs designed the new Apple offices is to push people to collide. And that's part of our major ethos is we beg, borrow, and steal bits of other businesses, whether it's our software platform that we're building, let's look at other ones and take what we like, and Steve Jobs, the way he builds an offer, like, you know, so we're not reinventing, and none of this is original.
If
but
the wheel's
is.
Rolling and it doesn't need to be reinvented,
there's nothing original in this world anyway.
Yeah.
The best book I ever read was Steal Like an Artist, and it's 30 pages in it, and it literally says, like, everything was emulated. Not imitated, but emulated.
You guys are just giving me so many knowledge bombs, and I'm going to have, like, five paragraphs of show notes. Just
yeah, and I'm teeing you up.
Define all this stuff.
I'm teeing you up to steal all kinds of stuff from other podcasters and get away with it.
There you go.
Yeah,
well, that's funny because there's a few shows to listen to, and they can't stand the fact when they have people who comment and they say, oh, you don't have enough action items or actionable content. Well, I don't have to worry about it on this show. You guys have dumped a ton of it already. So
yeah, I got full of it. Get us on a soapbox and a mic.
But that's the fun of it, though. If you're doing what we're talking about, everybody should have that list, that knowledge base, the favorite books, the best practices, the guidelines, the podcasts they listen to. That's the other thing that comes with networking.
Here.
Yeah, there you go. You have an on-site library. So I'm sure one day as you guys grow, you might end up putting an on-site server. And next thing you got digital library of all kinds of content. That's where the technology already is. So, we've talked about health, man. We talked about business. We've talked to, you know, some on lifestyle. Where are you guys going next? What else is happening? What's some next steps? I think you guys were telling me a little bit about some stuff earlier.
So I'll cover a couple things in our pipeline. So what we're really focusing on now that we have our software in place and our locations is developing content to support all of that. So there's a couple areas that we're developing content. First is we spent some time and we dabbled around with Udemy and created a couple courses, and that was really just a learning experience. Now we're getting serious and we're going to start to develop courseware around entrepreneurship that we can offer out to our communities to learn internally and also to our customers, the universities, to offer to their students. The other area is actually publishing. So we have a book that we're writing called Hello, I'm Lost, and you can actually find more about that at helloimlost.com.
I already bought the URL, people. There you go. They're on it. They're serious. I bought a lot of domains over the years.
So we've been chipping away at that, and it's going to be for really undergraduate or first-time entrepreneurs that are just on their path and they don't know exactly where they're going. And it has some stories in it of entrepreneurs that we know, and some of them are in the Hatch House and others outside, and how can we guide people and how can they guide themselves? That's what the book talks about.
The scary part of this is that it as long as Hatch House continues to grow and the model is successful and this book comes out, there's no reason why you could potentially turn it into a series, because as you guys meet more and more and support and grow with more, as more people come in here and they're getting pushed together and they move on, their companies grow, whatever, you guys just have tons of access, of like direct access to all these stories and all these people. That's pretty powerful.
It's really cool. And we want to find ways to increase the speed of which that happens. And that's when we first opened this location, to answer your question, where we're going, we first opened here. And we had a member of our board who said, you know, it almost feels like you guys are just playing house. You know, like, it's really challenged us to say, like, be offended by that in a way, but, like, say, like, he's kind of right now. That's what it looks and feels like. That was back then. And when we started growing, we started opening locations through licensing very quickly, and we started to experience, like, how to work through procurement of schools or other organizations that want to have us. So we've gotten contacted by, like, economic development in different cities, and I went down to a city outside of Philly, and they asked me to look at some properties and get, you know, they want a license from us. And those things pop up, and then we're like, well, how can we connect all these places together? Like, it needs a home.
Right.
You know, and us as entrepreneurial community managers need a tool that's not something that somebody else made because we couldn't find something that we liked.
Nice.
We noticed that there was a pain at the community managers and incubators, accelerators in the schools that we were working with. So we created a platform that essentially deems that all these entrepreneurial locations to be hubs, and they're all closed private hubs within a global network. And that's what we're launching, and that's how we'll connect our locations. It's how we'll connect schools and co-working spaces and accelerators and regions that are trying to grow, you know, entrepreneurship. And that's the principle. So to answer your question, it's like what David mentioned, video content and books, and those are important. They're content that will plug in to a model, and they're fringe things, you know, but the overall, you know, business will exist as one large online network that connects our physical accelerator locations with other innovation hubs.
Well, nowadays that's a technology. People love the fact that you have virtual access to almost anything. So if you guys do provide that kind of platform, and again, not just from a business mindset, but next thing you know, you have properties like maybe having calls with each other or video chats with each other. And then maybe somebody's grilling in the background, like, dude, just share a recipe or something. So it's not, it goes back to this whole house thing and everything under one roof. I love it because one person who's never grilled in their life, and maybe the other tenant who's here is grilling. Next thing you know, they're learning how to maybe cook a little bit healthier, how to learn other ways. So, because like how many kids go to college and learn how to live off of ramen?
Right.
We've all done it. Mm-hmm. So not a healthy step at all. Cut ramen out of your life as early as possible. But budgetary-wise, people don't know any better. So, but again, coming into an environment like this, that's what I really love about it, is that I'm surrounded two times I've been here. Walk in, there's already two of your companies here working, and then you're on a conference call. You were out back on the conference call. You didn't even know. I looked out the window and saw you out in the backyard. I'm like, all right, everybody's busy. All right, this place is hot. This is good. And it was like 4:30. Yeah. So it's clearly working. Things are definitely looking very well for you guys. Let's close on a positive note. From each of you, just around this whole health and business lifestyle mindset, and you can pick either one of the three or tie them all together, but I guess what's a message that really kind of you want to put out to the world on those themes? And you could just go off of lifestyle. I mean, what's something you say, you know what, guys, focus on this because it's helped me. It's important. And maybe you can call this actionable content or it's an actionable item, but I don't know, man. I like to share best practices. So, and I love quotes, but I'm not going to have you guys do a favorite quote. Sorry.
I'll start.
I need time to think.
Yeah. All right. Excellent, Steve. You let your
gears turn
in a way. So one of the things that I think unifies everything in your life is really one core word, and that's discipline. So if you can put discipline in your business and really refine everything that you do into a process, and that might not be a perfect process, might be an ugly process, but if you can get that, then you're going to have a predictable outcome in your business. In your health, your health can be very disciplined by the food that you put into your body, the way that you move your body, and even just the way that you think about your body if you meditate. That discipline is something that's really going to help you get to the next level. And then the last thing is like lifestyle, who you put into your lifestyle and you associate with and how you spend your time and how you balance work with play. That discipline is the discipline that's going to allow you to get what you want. So you might have to do some of the things you don't want to do now, which takes discipline to get to where you want to get to.
I love it. That's David Gritz, ladies and gentlemen. He just dropped some serious bombs right there.
If you had a mic, you could drop the mic.
All right. Yeah. All right.
I just bought that. So, but thank you. I like the metaphor.
Yeah. I mean, it took most of what I was coming up with, but I think so for me, it's habits, right? So what I've gotten really good at in the last year is having an inner monologue around habits. And I think habits and discipline are interconnected for sure. So I'm not saying that they're completely different, but I think that they are. And my theory is that, you know, the habits that pertain, the habits that pertain to the actual, you know, the outcomes, right? So you think about your habits in your personal life. So like David said, who you surround yourself with. Well, who are you picking up the phone when you're bored? Who are you calling when you're bored? Who are you stopping by so-and-so's house on your way home? And then what are you putting in your body when you first wake up? And what are you, you know, doing? And how are you handling your to-do list and tackling? You know, it's all like habits. And we just so intrinsically are ingrained in our habits. We do them. We're programmed. It's almost like you don't have a choice. You know, once you realize the power of habit, another really good book I learned a lot of this stuff from. Once you learn like the mechanisms and triggers behind habits, you start to like study these habits. And then you start to look at your own life and you experience your own life saying, wow, I'm doing something. It's like I'm not even thinking about it. But all those little habits add up. Like over the next 2 years, David and I will be as healthy and as successful and as good looking, right, as we want to be based on like the little things that we do along the way. So if we don't want to do the hard work or we have bad habits or this and that, like it's like a little penny, a little penny, a little penny. But then you invest it, it compounds in the interest and it grows because of good habits. But you can't get there if you're going to have good habits for a week and then bad habits for a
week. Ties back to David's discipline.
Discipline, you know. But for me, if I'm going to leave one last piece of advice, I would say spend the next week having an inner monologue or jotting it down. Like, what are your habits and what are you having a conscious choice over? And what are you allowing to happen in your life? Put it in your mouth, comes out of your mouth, what you're writing on paper, typing, how you work. Like, just watch it happen. And then you can step back and say, all right, well, you can't just tackle them all. Habits are very difficult to break. So there's some structure behind breaking habits, but then tackle one at a time. You know?
I like that. And again, that's an important point here. There's positive and negative habits in our lives. So you have to look at it as a whole. Like, I like that point. You got to look at all of them. You got to put that whole pros and cons list and be honest with yourself.
Like a stock
price. Yes. And there's going to be a habit that sometimes falls in both columns, right? You got habits that have positive and negative. So it's like, okay, is it more positive or is it more negative? I've got to weigh that and see what's more important with my future. Yeah. But I like it, guys. Well done.
Cool.
Well, that's the Live the Show. Live the Fuel. This is a new podcast. That's it. I can't even talk right today. That's the Live the Fuel show with Steve Berner and David Gritz. Thank you, guys. This was awesome.
Thanks, God.
We'll definitely be coming back. This will be some more fun episodes ahead. And stay tuned, guys. It'll be more fun. And I'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thanks.
Take it easy, guys, out there. Later.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up, epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.